Hello and welcome to episode 66 of the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. I am Patrick Macias, the author of Tokyo Scope, the Japanese cult film companion.
And I'm Matt Ault, the author of Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World. 66, wow, we're two digits to the sign of the beast.
We're not getting any younger, Matt.
We're not. And speaking of beasts, I think we have a pretty beastly episode in store today, do we not?
For sure. The King of the Monsters, Godzilla, is celebrating his 70th anniversary with a new movie called Godzilla Minus One, starring Cheech Marin and Paul Rodriguez.
There was no one in the movie. I was totally disappointed. Thumbs down.
I have to say it wasn't very diverse. There was no one in Godzilla Minus One who looked like me, so I just want to get that out of the way right now.
Actually, one thing I want to get out of the way is, how exactly is this the 70th anniversary of Godzilla when the first one came out in November of 1954? I wouldn't be surprised if I had missed a year. Like, I feel like I've missed two or three in pandemic leading up to this, but isn't this 2023?
The way I understand it is Godzilla is technically 69 years old right now, bro, but it's the 70th anniversary year. This way they can stretch it out longer.
Is this Hollywood accounting? Is that what this is?
Yeah, like Mel Brooks was flown in from the Spaceball set and told them, merchandising, where the real money from the movie is made. So yeah, it's going to be 70 years of Godzilla stuff being shoved down our throats, and they're getting things off to a bang, not only with the release of Godzilla Minus One, which happened on Godzilla Day, which is November 3rd, technically, yes, the anniversary of the release of the first Godzilla film, but also, I don't know, all kinds of stuff. But Godzilla Minus One, the new Godzilla movie, is the big enchilada here on the plate, and we're going to get into some spoiler-free impressions of that there movie right about now after we sneak into the movie.
This has been a crazy day for me. I watched a really awesome Godzilla short on YouTube, the Godzilla vs. Jet Jaguar Fest film that Toho just released. And then I went to the movie theater and I saw an actual Godzilla movie in a Japanese movie theater, Godzilla Minus One. And this is the thing. I know we're going to get into the details of both of these, but I'm just going to cut to the conclusion. I thought they were both awesome. What happened? Like, usually I'm so disappointed and depressed every time I go and see like a modern day kaiju film or something. And I feel like this day has been like, I don't know, the clouds have parted. I can see clearly now the kaiju have come. What happened, Patrick? What's going on?
I don't know. There must have been some magic in that old gray hat they found or something like that. Yeah, they released the 50th anniversary Godzilla short. It's a 10-minute film called Operation Jet Jaguar. And for me, this is the Japanese pop culture event of the year. This is like second for second the most awesome thing I've seen that Japanese people have made in a very long time. I don't even know how to explain it except that it's men in rubber suits doing a kaiju smackdown the old school way. When Godzilla breathes his atomic death blast, it just sets off a small explosion and some sparks. At one point, Jet Jaguar, Godzilla's robot buddy, now his enemy, his suit begins to catch fire a little bit.
Yes.
It's so charming and so crazy, and it's just like eating a box of like Captain Crunch Oops All Berries at 10 minutes. No fat, no lean.
I don't say this often, 100 points, A plus. I mean, it hits all of the pleasure zones, all of my kaiju erogenous zones. It's in Shibuya. They're fighting in Shibuya. There's like 2 seconds of expository like humans in there, and then immediately they start fighting one another, the two kaiju, well, or the kaiju and the robot. This suits are spot on old school kind of designs. They're actually destroying physical buildings, it seems like. I know there's some CG going on in here, and they're kind of cheating by setting it at night so they don't have to build elaborate backdrops. But these are very minor criticisms. It's like, it's what I dreamed adulthood would be like when I saw Godzilla vs. Megalon in the 1970s. I was like, when I grow up, decades from now, they're still going to be making movies featuring Godzilla and Jet Jaguar, right? 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 And it didn't happen until now.
It's probably the best man in a suit Godzilla thing I've seen since, oh man, I don't know when, Godzilla versus Biollante or something like that. And as long as they keep pumping these out, I'll keep supporting them.
Oh, for sure.
At the end of the short, it has a big old to be continued and there's a shockaroo twist ending. So let there be more.
My favorite moment in it, there's a point where Godzilla like picks Jet Jaguar up by the throat. He's like choking him against the side of a building. And they pan down to Jet Jaguar's feet, which are obviously just a pair of like Puma sneakers with tape on them. It's just like, and he's wearing like tinfoil socks. And it's just so perfect. It's great. It like, it just, and it all works. We're making it sound cheesier than it is. It's actually not cheesy at all. It's actually quite heartwarming. It warms the cockles of my mechanical heart.
I mean, I was jumping up shouting, get him, Godzilla, get him. Yeah, yeah. It's that kind of feeling. It's the spirit of 73. What can I say? They nailed that old school Godzilla flavor for us old school fans.
Did you accidentally punch your monitor just like Jet Jaguar did that building?
I just want to run out in the streets of Shibuya and just start punching people with like no ill will. I just want to like destroy the city just because that's what you do, I guess.
It was so much better than Shibuya Halloween. That's all I can say.
That's true.
Shibuya Halloween wishes it was this good.
So the Operation Jet Jaguar short film was kind of one of the cornerstones of this Godzilla Day event they had here in Hibiya, Tokyo. And you can watch it on YouTube right now. But as soon as they find out people are enjoying it, they usually take these shorts down. So,
because yes. Why would you leave something this awesome up? You know, it's too awesome.
So I was actually there at Hibiya for the Godzilla Fest. I was just there to go see Godzilla Minus One on opening day, but I got sort of like swept into the black hole of the stage show, the 8-hour Godzilla Fest stage show, and it was amazing.
Yeah, no. So yeah, I want to hear about this because the Godzilla versus Jet Jaguar was like the appetizer for the main course that is Godzilla Minus One, and that main course was served up actually in many courses in Hibiya at the Hibiya movie theater in downtown Tokyo, right?
Yeah, it's an 8-hour stage show, I guess with intermissions and pee breaks. And I got there, I guess, just as it kicked off, just as they were starting, and there were all these guys in like head-to-toe camouflage with like G-Force t-shirts on it. Maybe they thought Godzilla was real and they were showing up like a militia or something.
Is this like the S1Ws from Public Enemy videos? That's amazing.
It was a holiday in Japan. It was Bunka no Hi, Culture Day. So there were all these kids out of school running around buying kaiju toys. There were whole families wearing these giveaway chibi Godzilla, baby Godzilla hats that they were giving out like Burger King crowns. It was pretty sensational.
So you watched the whole thing?
Oh, No. It was 8 hours of stage show. There's no way I was going to do that. I went into the theater, you know, I got my adult beverage, I snuck it into the movies. Pandemonium in the lobby as the ancient art of lining up to buy stuff was in full effect. Everyone's taking photos. They had like Godzilla props and mock-ups.
Oh, wow.
Big figures and stuff. So Toho Studios is located in Hibiya. So this is like their flagship theater. So
yeah, their office, right. My theater where I saw it, I just saw it at a local neighborhood theater. So they didn't have much like cool merch on sale. But what did they have at your theater? Were there like toys?
There's all kinds of limited edition garbage. I guess everyone's going after the blue theater exclusive kaiju vinyl figure. I just took one look at that line and I'm like, you know, on second thought, maybe I'll just let this one pass.
You know, and it's not just there. Like there's like a Sento, like a bathhouse that has some kind of tie-in with the Godzilla film. Maybe it was like one of the scenes in there. I don't know. And like they're selling limited edition toys there too. So, you know, I guess Mel Brooks is right.
Merchandising, that's where the real money from the movie is made. So I go into the theater, totally sold out. There's men and women and children of all ages. Everyone loves Godzilla. Everyone's wearing their chibi Godzilla hats that they got outside. And then this really messed up movie about World War II starts.
Yes, it's a little grim.
Wow, man. Who turned out the lights?
Who harshed on my mellow, man? I want to hear more about what, because you were at Godzilla Ground Zero. I will say, I watched it today, which is 2 days later. It's Sunday. You saw it on Friday. My theater was not packed. Not a great sign. And I will say that who was there was a lot of families. And I feel really bad for like the 5 to 7-year-olds who had to. I like the movie. I like it a lot. But like I 5 to 7-year-old me, who still admittedly does exist within me, wasn't a huge fan of the movie. Like if you're like hoping for monsters to be punching each other in the face over and over again, not the film.
Oh, so maybe we should get into some of those spoiler-free impressions right about now, Matt. I think I'm getting the message that you actually enjoyed this film.
I really, really did. Now, this isn't to say it's the perfect film. This isn't to say that it was, you know, a perfect 100 points or anything like that. Only the Jet Jaguar short gets that level of praise. But that being said, I was kind of unusually primed for this kind of storytelling. The reason why is because the setting of the film almost precisely overlaps with the exact same time period that the opening chapter of Pure Invention is set in. And so, like, I understood all of the callbacks and all of the references and all of the things that Takashi Yamazaki, the director, was doing to kind of set the stage for Japanese, nostalgic Japanese fans. Not even fans, Japanese people who just, you know, even if they didn't experience that post-war, immediate post-war era themselves, have read about it, know about it. If this film has any disadvantage, which the word I'm looking for, it's that I don't think that is going to translate that well abroad. It's pretty deep stuff. What did you think about it?
Well, like I was saying, it wasn't diverse enough for me, man. I kept waiting for Cheech and Paul Rodriguez to show up.
Actually, it's funny you say that, because one of my, I wouldn't even call this a criticism. If you know anything about this post-war period, Japan was an occupied country in between 1945 and 51 or 52? I can't remember off the top of my head exactly.
52, what America, I believe, was the end of
52,
the occupation.
Right. So they revert. This movie is set, like, the first scene takes place in like World War II, but it's basically set in the 3 years after World War II. And Japan was, and Tokyo were occupied. Like, the streets were filled with American jeeps and tanks and military vehicles. They had the right of way. There were, like, soldiers everywhere, not just downtown, but, like, at former Japanese military bases like Tachikawa, you know, Fusa, things like that. They'd all be coming into the city on their R&R. You couldn't escape foreign people, which is to say American people, on the streets of Japan at the time, for a very different reason than you can't escape Americans on the street of Tokyo now, which is that they're all tourists. These guys weren't tourists. They were everywhere. And, like, Yamazaki doesn't really, he kind of edits that completely out of this portrayal of Tokyo. You just don't see the Americans at all. There's, like, one brief hint of Pan Pan girls, which were the kind of sex workers who serviced the American servicemen. There's no really other way to put it. You briefly see them and are briefly mentioned. But other than that, it's, like, just really hyper-focused on Japanese and their homes, and their work, and in their lives. So that was one thing that I was kind of struck by.
I thought it was kind of a mixed blessing. On one hand, we were, like, spared the agony of, like, bad gaijin actors, like, trying to be MacArthur and stuff like that. But on the other hand, there was kind of a big missed opportunity here to kind of go into that stew of the kind of international, or whatever, the occupation.
Yes.
It just feels like they're living in a city that's been destroyed by the war. There's not a sense of it having any kind of political implications or anything like that. I mean, I think, like, after Shin Godzilla, maybe they wanted to step back a little bit from some of that.
Yeah, because that film is 100% social satire, political commentary, whatever you want to call it. Although, you know, that being said, this is a Takashi Yamazaki film in every sense of the word. And Takashi Yamazaki's name might not be that well known abroad. I guess if you're kind of a fan of this podcast, you might know him from having directed the live action Yamato movie. Most of his oeuvre is, like, super, like, either wartime or immediate post-war nostalgia. He really rose to prominence with a movie called Always, The Sunset Over Third Street, which is set in, like, 1958, when they're just about to finish the Tokyo Tower. And then he did one about The Eternal Zero, which is about, like, it's a very sentimental portrayal of, like, kamikaze pilots. And he did another one that's a really fictionalized retelling of the building of the Yamato. So he's like,
he's the nostalgia merchant, basically.
He is
what he is. He's basically making movies about post-war Japan, but aiming for big mainstream audiences. He does that with a lot of, these are, like, the two dirtiest words, like, in the English language, human drama. Okay, so there's a lot of, like, crying and screaming and people carrying on in this film. And
yes,
it was very hot and cold for me. I gotta say, Matt, like, you know, Leonard Maltin, forgive me, but there are some things I liked about this movie and some things I didn't. Okay.
I will say, okay, look, it's a little saccharine, okay? It's bordering on very saccharine, which actually fits very well in with his modus operandi.
Well, here's the thing is, I'm not against human drama when it's done well, like when Nick Adams is telling a chick he'll see her when he comes back from Jupiter. But like the human drama here is like, they're always looking at photos of dead people to like remind you why they're doing the thing that they're gonna do. And like,
it's a very grown-up film. It is absolutely not a film for kids. And by that, I don't mean there's anything like, it's not like particularly disturbing, like, but you know, there's no like sex, there's no like real violence, but it's just, it's very grown up. Do you know what I mean?
But I'm also saying, what I'm also trying to say is that it's also corny. Okay. Like this guy over here is a scientist because he has crazy Einstein-like hair. You know, this guy is, you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of stereotypes and a lot of just shorthand for like what people kind of expect when they go to see a movie and expect human drama. The people who hate Shin Godzilla are going to love this movie because it gives you all of those big, thick, obvious kind of character things that you didn't get in Shin Godzilla.
It deals in character studies for sure. And, you know, it's refreshingly free of any really, like, you know, Shin Godzilla was for me almost permanently marred by that one really bad casting job. What is her name? God, the woman who plays the president's daughter. Jeez, I'm forgetting her name. She is so shrill. I just can't deal with her performance. There's nothing like that in Yamazaki's film. They're all playing it very straight. And actually, I was, you know, speaking of casting and speaking of actors, did you recognize who the star is? Ryunosuke Kamiki.
He's actually
the former lead star, child star, of Yokai Daisenso, the Great Yokai War.
Oh my gosh, he's all grown up.
All grown up. And I thought he was like channeling Akira Takarada, the star of the 1954 Godzilla. He looks like Akira Takarada to me. Like he's dressed like, I mean, it's the same time period. So of course he's going to be dressed that way. It's obvious he studied him. He has a lot of the same kind of, you know, tortured sort of mannerisms of Akira Takarada. And I thought he did a really amazing job like carrying this movie.
The casting was great. The period detail was great. And they got actors who looked period appropriate. They didn't get like a bunch of TikTokers and talentos to kind of dress like it's 1947. So they did great on that kind of stuff. I just had some problems with the kind of the corny human drama. And it's very start stop. Okay. So I watched the original Godzilla over and over and over again, writing my recent Washington Post article. And you know, you feel the presence of Godzilla dominating every single action of the characters and the proceedings. In this film, it was really like the first half of the film, you're just watching a post-war drama that has one or two Godzilla scenes in it.
No, I would actually go so far as to say that this isn't really a kaiju movie. It's more of a post-war drama with a kaiju problem embedded in it. And that it worked for me insofar as I'm really familiar with that post-war period and was really interested to see how these scenes were designed and plotted out, how that played out. But, you know, it's kind of like a cross between Always, you know, The Sunset on Third Street and Jaws. And you know, that sounds like a ridiculous combination, but it is because you barely see the monster. When he comes, it's actually quite suspenseful. And I thought that the action scenes were well done. What did you, let's talk about that.
Let's talk about Godzilla. Let's talk about the big G himself.
What did you think about the action scenes?
The action scenes are great. I much prefer this style to whatever passes for the American Godzilla legendary monsterverse nowadays. You get about four big Godzilla scenes in this film, and two of them are candidates for like all-time great Hall of Famers. And I'm not going to say which ones they are, but you just watch the trailer. And I think actually the trailer kind of shows you already some of the best bits that you're going to see. So there was a little kid in the aisle that I was sitting in, and he was on the edge of his seat, like in pure movie magic for precisely two of those four Godzilla scenes. So I don't know what that tells you, but I was right there with him. There's the boat chase sequence, which is the best sequence in the entire film. And this is in the preview. This is not a spoiler. So yes, it's definitely like kind of harkening back to Jaws, or maybe that's the Meg 2 now. I don't know how many Meg movies there are now. Like, yeah, so the kaiju stuff was great. Godzilla himself was like a little inconsistent for me. Sometimes he's like a wild bear who's just like lashing out, like kind of like the legendary MonsterVerse Godzilla. And sometimes he's really stilted and robotic like Shin Godzilla. Yes. I didn't really understand like what he was. I guess when he's in water, he's like a big angry
bear. Yeah, he's lumbering on land, but he's like a, you know, he's ferociously fast in the water. And I agree. That was one of my kind of complaints about the film, is that there's kind of a disconnect. I don't know whether it's because maybe some of the CG scenes were done way earlier on, or they're done independently. And I should actually say, we should mention here, Takashi Yamazaki got his start as a VFX guy. He's actually a miniature designer and like a visual effects director on other films, many, many films actually, before he started to direct his own. So this isn't one of those cases where the director is only dealing with the people and somebody else is dealing with the VFX. I think he was dealing with it all.
Well, it's kind of like Anno and Higuchi with Shin Godzilla. You have kind of effects guys who are sort of in the director's chair, right?
Yeah, that's common. I mean, you know, as much as I love Inoshiro Honda, I mean, you know, the Godzilla effects, all of those scenes with Godzilla are Tsuburaya. You know, he owns those scenes. I'm sure he worked together with Honda on them, but you know, you had these two titans of Japanese film working on it. Here it's Yamazaki. I mean, I'm sure he's working with a great team and stuff like that. He's working with Shirogumi, the Japanese VFX company who he's kind of always been with.
I know Shirogumi because they did the animation for Urahara, the anime series I wrote the original story for.
Well, that's a cool connection. That's a cool connection. There's actually another kind of cool connection between us and this film. Did you notice there was a cameo by a friend of ours?
Johnny Somali? Oh, he was great in the movie.
He gets thrown into a building by Godzilla. You should don't even name that guy, man. He doesn't need any more PR from us.
No, we know someone who was in the movie. Who dat?
We know his voice. And he actually directed the montage in the middle. Remember there was a part in the middle where they had to tell a lot of story, but they didn't have a lot of time. They need a montage.
Yeah, there's a montage.
There's that the U.S. military montage. It was, and in the credits I saw, so this is kind of a spoiler, it's directed by Michael Arias. And it's his voice on
no
top of it.
No way. Oh my Lord, the director of Tech on Concrete.
Yeah,
Michael,
the director of Tech on Concrete.
We got to get him on the show.
We do. He wants to be on the show. I've had a couple conversations with him about various stuff. And I think once he comes back to Japan, he's abroad directing right now.
You mean once he travels forward in time from 1947, right? Yeah.
How did he get here he must be like 130 years old if he was alive, you know, back in 1948. But yeah, he did that. And I thought that was kind of cool because, you know, nobody asked us to be part of the movie. So it's nice to have at least one friend in there.
If you want spoilers, the entire film is like laid out in painstaking detail on the English language Wikipedia page now.
Man.
So, like, there's nothing we can do to spoil it any more than you can just do, you know, to yourself in one click.
I have some advice to Godzilla fans out there, which is
burn your American Godzilla merchandise.
Leave the planet immediately. Godzilla is attacking. No, go tell us when you get back from Jupiter. No, my advice to Godzilla fans is to not see this without subtitles, or to put this another way, make sure that you see this subtitled. You really, really need to follow the dialogue to get into the film. If you can't follow the dialogue really closely, it's going to be a slog. Like Patrick said, it's a very, very dialogue, character study heavy film. And bring the tissues. It's as the Japanese say, it is a very wetto, a very wet movie. It's very, very, very sentimental.
Or as I say, it's a very corny movie. And maybe you've seen these cliches in like hundreds of other films before. At one point, the protagonist, Koichi, does one of the shittiest things I've ever seen an adult do to a child in a movie.
Yes.
And after that point, it was like really hard for me to root for this guy. I'm like, wow, you're a piece of shit. I know you're going to turn it around at the end of the film, but it's kind of hard to like these guys now.
Yeah, there were some tough moments in there. And like, they're not like, you know, cancelable, but they're just kind of like, oh man, what are you thinking kind of stuff.
Yeah. But I was thinking like, what were the big embarrassing moments in the film that are going to make me like wince in pain? Like that woman's performance in Shin Godzilla. And there really isn't anything here that's like totally laughable and objectionable. Like it's passable. Like when I'm in a good mood, I'm going to give it a B. When I'm like in a bad mood, which I kind of am now, it's a C+ for me personally.
Interesting. So where do you rank Shin Godzilla?
That's probably in my top five. I love Shin Godzilla because it's so idiosyncratic. I think it's probably like a hard film for people who haven't seen Evangelion, who don't know who Hideaki Anno is. Because it's, you know, Godzilla is like this like abstract thing. It's not really like the Rock'em Osaka monster that he is, even in Godzilla Minus One.
It's only tangentially about Godzilla. Shin Gojira is only tangentially about Godzilla, and it's actually much more about Japanese society, the government, like the trauma over 311, the Tohoku disasters, and the Fukushima meltdown. And that's why it succeeds, because the first Godzilla movie was intended as social criticism, international criticism. It was based, as we know, in a real-life series of nuclear tests that had some really literal and tragic fallout. So that was what gave the Godzilla film, even though it's quote-unquote just a monster movie to the critics, its power. Shin Gojira had that too. This movie does not.
Looking back at the first film, it's reacting to then-current-day events. Okay, yes. So with this film, with Godzilla Minus One, like, he's really looking at what Godzilla means, like, 70 years later in the context of, like, the ghosts of war and, like, the nuclear age, all that 20th century anxiety. It's almost kind of like Oppenheimer in a way, you know, that we're really kind of looking back at the 20th century and kind of framing it as, like, what really changed our world. The trauma of the war, the atomic age, yes. All that stuff is, like, in the forefront of this film. Shin Godzilla, again, is kind of like Godzilla's, like, an abstract force. It's a disaster. Right. This is World War II and the atomic age.
It's a little, yeah, abstract is the way. There's no news peg for this film, so to speak. Do you know what I mean? Like, the original 54 Godzilla was about the, you know, Bikini Atoll and hydrogen testing. Shin Gojira was pegged to Fukushima and stuff like that. This film, for better and for worse, doesn't really have that peg. And if there's any, like, major criticism I have of it, and I say this framing it with that I actually like this film, and I think it's actually a very good Godzilla movie. If I have any criticism of it, it's that it's a little amorphous in what it's trying to say, other than, you know, there are forces out there that are more powerful than humans can ever hope to control, which, you know, we're like, okay, yeah, no, definitely. I think that the lack of Americans in the film is actually, you know, it makes perfect sense from a dramatic standpoint, but not so much from a thematic one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there was an opportunity to tell, like, a bigger, much bigger story here, but he really went for kind of the small scale personal everyman yes. story with, like, For Good and For Bad. Like, realistically, I will probably only want to watch the 20 minutes of Godzilla scenes again. I'm sorry. I'd rather watch Monster Zero if I want human drama in a Godzilla movie. Really, I'm not a guy who just watches monster scenes only, but this is one of those.
I actually wanted to see more of the city. I wanted to see more of Tokyo. I wanted to kind of be more immersed in 1940s, you know, mid to late 1940s Tokyo, because that's a place that not many modern films are set in. And so if I have any kind of disappointment, it's that.
You get a destroyed house, you get, like, a destroyed city, and then you get, like, a recreation of Ginza, and that's kind of it. To be honest.
Yeah, I was hoping for a little bit more that we would see other sections, because at one point, like, they show Godzilla approaching Shinjuku, and I was like, oh, this is going to be good. And then, like, he never actually shows up there. So on the other hand, we had Godzilla versus Jet Jaguar drop the same day, where we get to see plenty of Godzilla in Shibuya. So I guess, you know, I shouldn't be complaining. This is like an embarrassment of riches this week.
There's so much Godzilla this week. Like, it's coming out of the walls, man. We got to stop it.
I've been looking back at my social feed, my social media feeds, and my newsletter over the last couple weeks. It's like all Godzilla. This is like, it's all we've been talking about for weeks, but it's because all this stuff is coming out, and it's you know, it's whether it's, like I said, whether it's perfect or not, it's pretty cool. I like this. And again, it's really cool that we're able to experience Godzilla in his homeland.
Yeah, I'm excited to see everyone getting excited about Godzilla. I think the film is going to have its, like, American premiere this Friday, and then it opens big at the end of November at a bunch right. of theaters in the US. So everyone's going to see it soon. Everyone's going to weigh in. And everyone who hated Shin Godzilla is going to love this one. And I don't know, I'd be perfectly happy if Toho lets a kind of, you know, individualistic sort of visionary filmmaker do a Godzilla film every 5 years or something like that, which is what right. they've been doing since Shin Godzilla. That would be great. That would be fantastic. And if they keep pumping out these small scale rubber monster mashes like Operation Jet Jaguar, then everyone's happy. Everyone gets the Godzilla they want.
Well, it seems like kaiju culture is really flourishing now. And I like that it's flourishing pushing along these parallel lines where they're doing the small scale stuff with suits and they're, you know, doing the bigger scale stuff with CG to pull in more modern audiences. But I will say, as happy as I am that kaiju culture is flourishing, I'm deeply, deeply disappointed in you, Patrick. I'm disappointed.
Because I'm deeply hungover?
That you didn't watch all 8 hours of the Godzilla stage show, man. Stage show outside of Hibiya? Was it people like in suits punching each other in the face, or was it just a bunch of boring talk shows?
It was a lot of talk shows. At the end of the evening, though, they had a handshake event. You could like line up and like high five Godzilla, Jet Jaguar, and Chibi Godzilla all at once. And that would have been great. And no one tried to saw off Chibi Godzilla's hand because he like was dating someone like at an idol event or anything like that. So it seems like it went okay. No one got crazy or anything like that.
I wonder if we're going to see those suits and stuff show up at places downtown. When I was living here for my year abroad in college in 93, 94, that's when Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla came out. The first, you know, the Heisei Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. And, you know, I remember running into the suits. Like there's a photograph of me and that like and the actual shooting suit from the of Mechagodzilla that they just had like standing up in Tower Records or something like that. So we definitely need to go on a hunt. We need to find the props.
There's so many Godzilla events going on right now. Like even at some of the buildings in Hibiya, they have like little pop-ups that have like props, that have like original artwork. I can't even keep track of this stuff. I swear to God, it's like Godzilla mania all over again, Matt.
It's almost like it's a multi-million dollar franchise and not a lifestyle like we've thought it was all these years.
Yeah. So this is difficult. I'm thinking like, what would Siskel and Ebert do? Would this be a thumbs up or a thumbs down? They did give two big thumbs down to Godzilla 1985, something I will never forgive them for. No, would you give it a thumbs up?
Oh, I give it an enthusiastic clawed thumb up. I loved it. I actually really, really liked it.
I'm in the middle. I'm Leonard Maltin style. Some things I liked about it, some things I didn't.
Is this like a thumb war? Is my thumb like pressing your thumb down? Your thumb is flat.
A ubi senso? You're not allowed to declare a ubi senso in Japan because of the treaties here?
Too soon, Patrick. The last thumb war we've barely recovered from. But I like it. Go see it. It might be a little, I don't know if polarizing is the word, but it's thought-provoking. Let's call it that. And any movie that makes me think and any movie that kind of, you know, transported me away for a while, which this film did, I was looking at my watch in a couple places, but I was generally really down with the settings and the characters and stuff. So check it out. That's what Matt Ault says.
Every time I started losing interest, I took a photo of a dead person out of my wallet and looked at it and remembered why I needed to keep doing what I was doing already.
This is your problem, Patrick. Sorry, you're too cynical.
Is that just a me thing? Too soon?
Okay. It's just you. You're too cynical. You're too cynical. I was weeping openly. No, I wasn't weeping openly. Somebody was actually snoring openly in my theater, though. And then there were a couple of kids who obviously wanted out. I felt bad for all of those, but I enjoyed it.
Wow. So. That didn't happen in my theater. I think everyone was just so brainwashed by the Godzilla Fest taking place. Like, you know, with everyone within a 10-mile radius of my theater was like absolutely down for the movie and like probably ate it up.
I hope it is a success. Because I think that a lot of thought and care and love was put into it, even if I don't agree with every direction, I think it's worthy. But the fact that my theater was as empty as it was only 2 days later is not a great sign. Because I remember when the last Miyazaki Hayao movie came out, the theaters were packed for like weeks afterwards. Ironically, Hayao Miyazaki is kind of a big critic of Takashi Yamazaki. Yamazaki's Kamikaze film came out around the same time that The Wind Rises did.
It's like, hey, I'm the nostalgia merchant.
Well, Miyazaki was hammering on him for that being way too sentimental of a portrayal of like what was a really dark, like nasty period in Japanese history.
Yeah, that's two of us. For once, me and Miyazaki are in agreement about the works of Takashi Yamazaki.
You two should get it. We should have him on the podcast. We should have him on the podcast talking about nothing but Takashi Yamazaki. That'd be great.
Mr. Miyazaki, have you ever seen The Rain? Who gets that reference.
I believe it was Creedence Clearwater Revival. Were they singing about Godzilla in that song?
They made The Rain black? Was it them? I forget.
Anyway, enthusiastic thumbs up. You have an enthusiastic, semi-enthusiastic
thumb. My thumb is sideways. I'm sort of like the Emperor and Gladiator. Like you're just going to have to wait to see which way this one goes. But right now, I'm right in the middle here, ladies and gentlemen.
Now, Godzilla!
Godzilla! You can pretend Godzilla turns a mighty castle into a pile of sand.
Go do it, Godzilla!
You control Godzilla's ugly tongue. You can make him stomp, pound his tail, pretending he strikes it all in his way. You can launch Godzilla's claw for the final blow.
We did it!
What will Godzilla do next? It's up to you. Godzilla with a claw that launches, some assembly required, from the Shogun Warrior Collection by Mattel.
Welp, that about wraps it up for episode 66 of the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again next week with a new one. Any final thoughts, Matt?
67. Next week is 67. It's just, I can't even wrap my brain around the fact we've done this so many times. I'm eternally grateful to the, what was it that Andy Warhol said? We're all going to be famous to 15 people. No, that was the update of what Warhol said. I'm eternally grateful to the 15 people who continue to listen to this podcast.
I'd like to thank Chris Hill. We'd like to thank Christopher Mock. Fifth Dream. His name is also Chris, isn't it? I think so.
There's many people out there named Chris. And you know what? Even if your name isn't Chris, I appreciate you listening to this podcast. So
find other people named Chris and convince them to listen to the show too, is my advice.
What percentage of our listenership are Chris's? I don't know.
Plus one. Okay, plus one. I gotta remember that. Okay, I'll write that one down. Okay, so thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next time. Bye.
Catch you next time. Bye-bye.